And welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Kicking It with Keeler here on the Full Press Radio Network, episode number 9 of this show. And we're glad to be back for another episode. Hope all of you had a happy new year and are off to a good start to 2020. I'm your host, Ricky Keeler, and I'm excited to do this show today. We've had a lot go on in sports over the last week. We have playoff games to preview. We have college bowl playoff games to break down. New Year's Six bowl games just ended recently. We have the NBA. We have MLB signings still being made. A lot going on in the world of sports. Coaches getting fired in football. We'll get into that. So much to talk about over the next hour. And we actually have a really good guest coming on the show to talk about one of the college football semifinal games that took place last Saturday. Amy McKenna, who is the sports director and anchor for Tiger Vision, Clemson student-ran TV station. She was at the Fiesta Bowl, and she's going to hop on the show later on to recap Clemson's win over Ohio State and look ahead to the national championship from the Clemson perspective against LSU on January 13th. And we'll preview that game more in detail on next week's show. Want to remind you, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at RickNader555. It's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader, like in Terminator, 555. You can tweet the show, tweet the network on Twitter at Full Press Radio, or tweet the sites as a whole at FP Coverage. We got sites for NBA, MLB, NHL, NBA, the whole nine yards. We have everything for you over at Full Press Coverage. You can follow the show as well on iTunes, Spotify. Feel free to subscribe, give a rating. If one star, five stars, just give some feedback. I really appreciate any feedback you guys have on what you want to see on the show during this new year. If you're liking some of the segments, if you don't like some of the segments, please let me know. I'm glad to hear any opinions you guys have. So again, follow on iTunes, subscribe, the whole nine yards. And we're going to get into the playoff games. We're going to get into, of course, I'm going to talk about my Patriots and how bad they played against the Dolphins. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But 2020's been off to a really sad start in the sports world. We want to look back at some of the people that we lost over the last couple days. First being David Stern, the former NBA commissioner. He passed away from a brain hemorrhage that he had a few weeks ago. Was the commissioner for 30 years and did some great things. Globalized the sport, helped found the WNBA, got the NBA Finals off a tape delay, which is really surprising. Like, I'm only 27. I can't fathom the fact that there was a legit championship on tape delay. Well, yeah, that's amazing in and of itself. You had the Dream Team, of course. He helped get that together. Obviously, David Stern was a very tough disciplinarian kind of commissioner, but you have to respect him for that. So our thoughts and prayers to the Stern family. And you could see the impact that he had on some of the people in the NBA today from some of their statements this week. Second being Don Larson, who passed away at the age of 90 from esophageal cancer on Wednesday. Of course, we all remember Don Larson from the perfect game in Game 5 in the 1956 World Series for the Yankees. 81-91 during his career, but that World Series game, one of the great pitching performances of all time. I remember it fondly because it's on my birthday. No, I wasn't born in 1956, but October 8th is the date of the perfect game, so that's how I get sports fans remember when my birthday is. So thoughts and prayers to the Larson family. You saw the impact it had on David Cone. Remember, Don Larson was in attendance for David Cone's perfect game for the Yankees back in the late 90s. And of course, the third sad story is former Bengals coach Sam Weich. He passed away from complications from cancer. He's remembered from his time coaching the Bengals and the Buccaneers. Got the Bengals to a Super Bowl before losing to Joe Montana's 49ers. He's one of those coaches that came up with the no-huddle offense. So that you could thank him for some of the interesting calls that are the fast-paced offenses that we see now. He's helped that. So our thoughts and prayers to the Stern family, the Larson family, and the Weich family during those difficult times. Definitely not the way you want to start 2020. So let's get into the NFL. I'm going to get into my Week 17 thoughts first before I get into the playoff games and the head coaching situations. And I'm going to start with the Patriots. And we're going to get into more when we talk about this game. We'll do it a wild card word association too as I preview these games and give you my picks. That game last Sunday against the Dolphins was surprising to say the least. It's a Patriot team that had a chance for everything, a chance to clinch a bye, get back to that 2 seed, get a week off, get Brady healthy, get Edelman healthy. And it didn't happen. It did not happen. And for the Patriots to lead 24-20 with under 4 minutes to go, even though Brady had an awful interception in that game, go for a touchdown, all the defense had to do was stop Ryan Fitzpatrick one time, to get the bye. Not only did they not stop him, Bill Belichick doesn't take a timeout, and the Patriots are left with less than 30 seconds and 3 timeouts to go for a field goal. That's not going to happen more often than not. So you can argue Belichick put them in a bad situation. You can also argue Tom Brady's just been inconsistent this year. And I'm going to get into my feeling on this game coming up against the Titans on Saturday. But in my estimation, this game feels weird from a Patriot perspective. It's weird not just because it's their first wild card game in a decade, which I can understand some fans that feel like the sky's falling, which I don't think it is, but it has that uneasiness to it. And we'll get into that later on. I was very impressed with the San Francisco 49ers going on the road to Seattle, getting a win, clinching the number one seed. Both teams banged up. Seattle was really banged up at running back. They somehow found a way to keep it close, lost by a yard. But give the Niners credit. Jimmy Garoppolo goes on the road against the 12th man, finds a way to win. The Titans get the 6th seed in the AFC. No surprise there. I didn't really think the Steelers were going to even have a shot against the Ravens, even with RG3 at quarterback. Titans rolled. Houston didn't really play Watson or Hopkins. So it was easy for Tennessee to win that game. And then the NFC had the Eagles, who were tied with the Giants 17 apiece in the third quarter, but got a great game from Boston Scott in the ground game. Their defense tightened up late after giving up that long Saquon touchdown, and they were able to get the win, clinch the division. And the Dallas Cowboys are left sitting at home with a new head coaching vacancy. Now it looks like Jason Garrett is not going to be back as the head coach, which is no surprise there. It was long overdue. They need a change there after a decade with Garrett at the helm. And I'll talk about who I think could be the fit there in a little bit when I do the head coaching vacancies. It's going to be interesting to see what Jerry Jones decides. But a disappointing season for the Dallas Cowboys, who faced a lot of questions as well over the course of the offseason. In a year they were supposed to be much better than they were, I thought they were a Super Bowl team, and boy, did they make me look stupid. So let's get into some of these playoff games, and I'm going to start, of course, we'll go in game order. I'll give a word for the game, and I'll break it down a little bit for you, all of you as well. If you have your picks, you disagree with my picks, again, at Rickinator555, feel free to tweet me. Let's start with the first game, 4:35 on Saturday on ABC and ESPN. 10-6 Bills, 10-6 Texans. And my word for this one is ground game, because I really believe that the team that runs the ball better in this game is going to win. Whether it's between Devin Singletary and Frank Gore for the Bills, or Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson for the Texans. Because I think it's going to take less pressure off the other quarterback. There's a lot of pressure here on Deshaun Watson to win a playoff game. There's a ton of pressure on the Texans. Give them credit, they keep winning the AFC South, but at some point every year they're in this 4:30 Saturday game, and sometimes they do win it. But other times they fall flat, like last year against the Colts. You're the favorite, albeit by only, it looks like 2.5, close to a pick'em as you can get. You still have to find a way to win this game, and I'm really hard on the Texans because I do believe they have a lot of talent. They're getting J.J. Watt back, which should be an emotional lift for them. But if Hyde and Johnson can get the job done, it gets Deshaun Watson more chances for play action, gets him to roll out a little bit more, and it can maybe take the pressure off DeAndre Hopkins, who's got a really tough matchup against Tre'Davious White, one of the best corners in football, which means this has to be a big game for Kenny Stills on the Texans side, or Will Fuller if he's able to play. On the Bills side, if you run the ball well, you take the pressure off Josh Allen in his first playoff game. Allen has showed some good things throughout the season. He's proven a lot of the doubters wrong. I don't know yet if he's a great quarterback, but I think he's a good quarterback. If he can avoid making those mistakes, the Bills have a good shot because they can dump the ball off to Cole Beasley, maybe go over the top with John Brown a little bit. The Texans are susceptible to deep passes. You can maybe see that happen in this game. I'm going to go with the Buffalo Bills. They find a way to get the win. They get to the divisional playoffs. And I think it's largely because Allen plays turnover free and the Bills win a low scoring game. I think they get a couple turnovers on Deshaun Watson that change the course of this game. So I like Buffalo to win on the road to start the NFL playoffs. Let's go to the 8:15 game, Titans and Patriots on CBS. And my words for this one are end of an era. Again, there's an uneasiness to this football game. What happens if the Patriots lose? Does Josh McDaniels take another head coaching job, which might happen anyway? Is this Tom Brady's last game in a Patriot uniform? I don't think so, but I have doubts. I'm not 100% sold that this isn't Tom Brady's final game if the Patriots do lose. There's an aura right now around the team. Something's a little bit uneasy. You can tell they're still laser focused, but there's something different. This isn't, normally you would think it's Brady, it's Belichick, rally the troops, they're going to have a statement game, etc. And they still can, but it's just something different going on. The Titans are playing really well. Derrick Henry's pounding the football. He won the rushing title. I think he's going to have a decent game here. The Patriots are a little bit susceptible to the run. And I think Ryan Tannehill can make plays. The key matchup here is A.J. Brown against Stephon Gilmore. Can Gilmore bounce back after he got embarrassed by Devontae Parker last week? And can A.J. Brown make a big play in his first playoff game? Can Tannehill finally win a game in Gillette? Never has. So a lot can change by this game. I'm still going to go with the Patriots just because they're the more playoff-tested team. I'm not confident in it. I think it's a three-point game, so if you're betting this game, I think what the Patriots are favored by 5.5, I think, is the line. Tennis was 4.5, 5.5, something along those lines, around 5. I would think New England wins by less than 5. I think it's that close. But I think this Patriot defense also has something to prove. I think they're going to get a turnover or two. Usually when the Patriots win these kind of games, they win them with defense and they win with special teams. I could see a similar formula here. Is rain, there's maybe even a little bit of snow in the forecast. That changes a lot of things. It might help Tennessee a little bit with the run game, but they can't run the ball. Tannehill in that nasty weather, I don't really trust. So I'll take the Patriots in this game. I don't think they'll make a Super Bowl run, but I do think they get past this one and get to Kansas City. To the NFC with the first game on Sunday, 1:05 on Fox, 10-6 Vikings, 13-3 Saints. And I'm going to go with revenge. I know the Saints probably aren't talking about it publicly, but you know Drew Brees and Sean Payton want revenge for the Minneapolis Miracle. The Saints are red hot right now. You're starting to see Alvin Kamara get going on the ground game. I'm loving what the Vikings did to get here. Give Dalvin Cook a lot of credit. He had a great season. We'll see how healthy he is on Sunday, along with Alexander Mattison in the ground game. They'll need those two to keep Brees off the field. But the Saints are just clicking on all cylinders right now. They're a lot of people's favorite out of the wildcard games to get to the Super Bowl. They would have to play Green Bay if they win this game in Lambeau, which would be really fun to watch. I just think the Saints roll. I have a tough time thinking Kirk Cousins is going to win a big game on national television, playoff game. I'm going to go with the Saints big. I think they're in that kind of zone right now. So the final game on NBC, Sunday at 4:40, 11-5 Seahawks, 9-7 Eagles in Philadelphia. Basically another pick'em. But for this game, I'm going to go nasty. I think this game's going to be a little bit nasty, low scoring, physical. Both these teams battling injuries. We'll see how healthy Zach Ertz is for the Eagles. The Seahawks, of course, their injuries at running back we talked about earlier. This is when you're going to need Russell Wilson to make some plays. It's Carson Wentz, too, and give Carson Wentz credit for getting to this point. Finding a way in December with a lack of weapons. We'll see how many weapons he has on Sunday. But I think Seattle wins close. I could see this game going either way. I would not be surprised if the Eagles won. But I think Russell Wilson just makes one more play than Carson Wentz. And maybe this is where Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf have a big game against an Eagles secondary that you can make big plays on. So I'm going to go with Seattle. So my picks this week, Buffalo, New England, Saints, Seahawks. Two road teams, two home teams. So if my predictions hold true, which they probably won't, I would say Bills will play the Ravens. Seahawks will play the 49ers. Saints will play the Packers. Patriots will play the Chiefs. You get four pretty good games on divisional weekend, but it'll be good games nevertheless, you would think. Let's get to the head coaching vacancies. You have the Browns. You have the Giants. You have the Panthers. And now it's looking like you have the Cowboys. Redskins hired Ron Rivera on a 5-year deal. Rivera gets Jack Del Rio to be his defensive coordinator. And while Dan Snyder still thinks it's Thanksgiving, I don't know how, but he still somehow thinks it's Thanksgiving. And you don't normally associate the words smart with Redskins. Then, but still, you have to give the Redskins credit. They actually made a good move. Ron Rivera can get this team on the right track. You've got Dwayne Haskins. Rivera's work with Cam Newton should help with Dwayne Haskins. They're going to get Chase Young likely the number 2 pick in the draft. They're going to help that defense. I could see the Redskins at least improving next year. So Ron Rivera is a good hire for them. As for the open vacancies, I think Josh McDaniels gets one of them. If I had to make a pick, and I don't have the inside scoop like a lot of people do. These are just guesses on my part. Jimmy Haslam, I don't know what he's doing with the whole Browns decision-making process as the owner. A little crazy what's going on there. John Dorsey's out as the general manager. I still think McDaniels gets that job. A lot of people think Vikings offensive coordinator Kevin Stefanski could get it. But McDaniels, to me, with his dad's roots in Ohio, McDaniels loves Baker Mayfield. I think you give him Odell, you give him Landry, you give him a chance with those offensive weapons. I think that's a good fit for this Browns team that needs their offense to gel if they want to make a big run in 2020. They need McDaniels. I think that's the guy. Carolina could be a good fit for McDaniels as well. But I think if it's Brady excluding, like if it's not a package deal with Brady, which none of these jobs would be, unless maybe Carolina, but I highly doubt it, Cleveland makes the most sense for McDaniels. I think he should go there if he does take a job this cycle. So that'd be my pick. I think he goes there. For the Giants, I'm going to go with Matt Rhule, the Baylor head coach. I know Baylor disappointed in the Sugar Bowl against Georgia. But for the job Matt Rhule has done turning a one-win Baylor team into a team that made a Sugar Bowl in about 2 years, give him a lot of credit. And I think he has experience under the Giants with being a coach on Tom Coughlin's staff. The Giants love people that are familiar with their workings of their organization. I think Mike McCarthy makes sense here too because he's proven he's won a Super Bowl. The Giants kind of need a proven commodity at this point. But if they don't go with McCarthy, I think Matt Rhule would be a really good choice for them. Doesn't have experience as NFL head coach, but I think he's good at rebuilding a program. And with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, you at least have the foundation to build a program. To the Panthers, I'm going to go with McCarthy here. I think if you get Mike McCarthy, you know, David Tepper, the owner, wants to make a splash. I would like to see Eric Bieniemy get this job. He's done a good job as the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs. But on the Carolina side, I think they need a proven commodity there as well. I could easily see McCarthy getting this job. Another popular name you could see, maybe the Niners defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh, could get this job. I'm sure I mispronounced that last name wrong. I apologize if I did. But I think the Panthers need a proven hire. I think McCarthy would be that. And for the Cowboys, Jerry Jones is a big wild card here. Because we've seen Lincoln Riley, but you can't deny that that Oklahoma beatdown they took at the hands of LSU in the Sugar Bowl doesn't change your opinion on Lincoln Riley a little bit. Just a little bit. I think they need a proven name as well. I would love McDaniels in Dallas. See what he can do with Dak, see what he can do with Zeke, and see what he can do with Amari Cooper. You get that strong feeling it might be Urban Meyer. You might see Urban Meyer go get this job. But Jerry Jones loves those college coaches. We've seen it with Jimmy Johnson in the past. We've seen it with Barry Switzer. Could Urban Meyer be that guy? It's possible. But if I'm going to go different college coach, I don't think he'll get the job. What about Dan Mullen? Dan Mullen, the head coach of Florida, back-to-back New Year's 6 Bowl wins. And who was Dak Prescott's coach in college at Mississippi State? Dan Mullen. Who used his skill set better than anybody has in the NFL? Dan Mullen. If you're going to pay Dak Prescott $35 to $40 million a year and make him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, shouldn't you get a coach that knows how to use your franchise quarterback? If Jerry's going the college route, I'd argue Dan Mullen's a better fit for Dallas than Urban Meyer is. I don't think Mullen gets the job, but I think that's a name you want to consider here for the Dallas Cowboys. I would have said Ron Rivera at the time, but of course getting the Redskins job, that changes things. So I think it'll be Meyer, but I would like to see Mullen get a shot with the Cowboys. So that's my thoughts on the coaching vacancies. Again, if you want to give your thoughts at RickNader555 on Twitter, please feel free to tweet me. Let's get a little bit of college football. My thoughts on the New Year's Six Bowls. Of course, the playoff, LSU absolutely beat down Oklahoma. That was Joe Burrow put on a clinic. 8 total touchdowns, 7 passing in the first half. The rushing touchdown came in the third, but Oklahoma had no answers. Jalen Hurts struggled. And Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase are outstanding receivers on the outside for LSU. Speed demons, they get down the field. Burrow can chuck it up if he wants, and those guys will make big plays. 4 touchdowns for Jefferson in that game against OU. I was not surprised LSU won. I was surprised how handily it was. I thought LSU would win convincingly. Not that convincingly. In the other semifinal, give Clemson a lot of credit. Down 16, Ohio State's moving the ball at will, but the Tigers held the Buckeyes out of the end zone, forced them to kick field goals, and Clemson finally got big plays. I know Ohio State finally felt they got robbed on a couple of plays, including that ball that was ruled incomplete that was a fumble that Ohio State should have had a touchdown on. But on the Clemson side, Trevor Lawrence gets a big 67-yard touchdown run. They lock down on defense, and Lawrence makes the big plays late to get the win. Justin Fields throws the interception at the end. I thought Fields played well, but Ohio State not getting those touchdowns early cost them that football game. And that's why we have, I think, the two best teams in the championship between LSU and Clemson on January 13th. I think we're going to get a good game, even though LSU should be the prohibitive favorite since the game is in New Orleans. But don't count out Clemson. They've won 29 straight. It's kind of like counting out the Patriots when you count out Clemson. For the other New Year's Six Bowls, I thought Memphis was competitive against Penn State in the Cotton Bowl. That game was fun to watch. Both offenses, I thought, played well. Memphis had a lot of speed, but Penn State got the job done. The Orange Bowl was closer than expected. Give Virginia credit for battling, but Florida, with Kyle Trask and Mullen, as I said earlier, got 10 wins again after losing his quarterback at the beginning of the season. So Florida goes under the radar. They weren't talked about a lot, but they had a really good year. In the Rose Bowl, Justin Herbert with 3 rushing touchdowns. I don't know if he showed a lot in the passing game, but on the ground, he was able to get Oregon to a comeback win in a game Wisconsin controlled if it wasn't for some really bad turnovers that they had. But you saw also how great Jonathan Taylor is running the football for the Badgers. And finally, the Sugar Bowl. Jake Fromm, to me, I came away impressed by Jake Fromm. I know he's had a lot of drops from his receivers this year, but he got George Pickens back in this game for the full game, and Pickens was great in the first half. You saw how accurate Fromm can be, and I think when you talk about the Bulldogs, and you talk about Fromm, he's got a big decision to make. He comes out in this draft, he's the 3rd or 4th ranked quarterback in this class right now. If he comes back, tries to win a title next year for Georgia, and goes in the NFL the following year, might be the 3rd or 4th best quarterback again, depending on if Tua stays in Alabama or goes to the NFL this year. So it's, when you look at it, a lose-lose for Fromm. I don't think he really improves his draft stock, but I'm telling you, like I said, if I were the Patriots, I'd look at Jake Fromm. I think he's accurate. He's really good in the short to intermediate routes. His deep balls, I thought, good in the Sugar Bowl. He had a drop in the end zone. I would be a big fan of Jake Fromm. Right now, I do like the way that he plays when you watch the Bulldogs in action. Right now, my bowl picks as of Friday afternoon, I'm 27-10. I only do straight up. I don't do spreads or confidence picks. I got Notre Dame dead wrong. I picked Iowa State. That didn't work. I picked Baylor against Georgia. That didn't work. Auburn lost to Minnesota. Cost me a free Bloomin' Onion, but Minnesota had a really good year under PJ Fleck. Alabama beat Michigan in the Citrus Bowl. No surprise. Jim Harbaugh loses the game that Michigan wasn't favored in. That's nothing new. Alabama's got great wide receivers. Love watching those guys, Judy and Smith and Ruggs. Although Ruggs got hurt during the game, Judy just makes big plays. He's a top 5 pick easily in this year's draft. So I was impressed with Alabama, at least showing they wanted to play in this game. And it sounds like they're getting Dylan Moses, their linebacker, back next year. Maybe we'll see some of these guys come back for Alabama to try to get them back to the playoff and back in a national championship. So let's get into my conversation with college football. Again, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I recorded a segment this week with Amy McKenna. She is the sports director and anchor at Tiger Vision. She covers the Clemson athletic program for the Clemson Student Television Network. It was a great interview. Amy gives a lot of knowledge, and I think you're going to all enjoy this interview. So without further ado, let's get into my conversation with Amy about Clemson, the Fiesta Bowl, and a look ahead to the national championship on January 13th. And joining me now here on Kick It with Kior to help me preview the national championship game that takes place on Monday, January 13th, is our guest for today. She's the sports director and anchor for Tiger Vision. Please welcome Amy McKenna, who works over at Clemson University. She's a student at Clemson University. Amy, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm doing great. You know, it's a new year, fresh start, so it's a good day.
Absolutely. Definitely a great start. Fresh start to a new year. So let's see what this game is all about. Before we look at the national championship game, and a lot can change between now and 12 days or so, what's the buzz around Clemson? I know it's winter break. You don't get the same buzz, let's say, you would around like March Madness, something like that for basketball. But what's the buzz around this team once again in the national championship game?
Yeah, I think we're all just really excited to see Trevor Lawrence run the ball more than he did last year. This is something that he worked on over the off season, and they've really made it a point to get his legs moving for Clemson's offense this year. Also, you know, Clemson's defense last year was top of the line, couldn't be beat. And so coming into the season, the expectations for Clemson's defense were relatively low. You know, it's Clemson, they're still going to be decent, but they've been putting up even better numbers in some categories than last year. And Tanner Muse, Isaiah Simmons, Xavier Thomas, James Golfke, they've all stepped up for Clemson. And that's something that people have been talking about a lot because the expectation wasn't super high. And also Clemson's offensive weapons, Trevor Lawrence and T. Higgins, they have more experience than last year. And so they've been able to be really effective this year. So there's kind of a lot going on in the conversation around Clemson.
Yeah, there's nothing. You brought up a good point on the defense where you look at these teams compared this year to last year. Clemson had so much talent get taken in the draft on that defensive line. It seems Brett Venables has had to change a lot on that defense. It helps when you keep around a guy like Isaiah Simmons, who is an absolute monster on that defensive line. But how have you seen this defense change over time? Because ever since that North Carolina game, it's been a completely different defense.
Yeah, they really have. I think they are even more locked in and focused than they were earlier. I think that UNC game was a big wake-up call for the whole Clemson team, but specifically the defensive line. And Xavier Thomas saving the game, basically, for Clemson, tackling the runner right before he could have gone in the end zone. That was a scary moment for Clemson fans. But yeah, they've definitely had to mature a little more, I think. Some of the leaders that I mentioned have had to step up and fill in the roles that were left by, you know, our huge draft prospects from last year.
So you look at this team in particular compared to the national championship teams with Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence from a year ago. In your mind, what's different about this team? Is it the fact that now you've got Dabo Swinney basically saying we're the biggest underdog in sports for a team with a 29-game win streak?
I think an angle that he loves to take. I think that's really fun for Dabo. He loves to, you know, use the underdog narrative, and his team has bought into it, which is the most important part for him. But yeah, I think the Deshaun Watson and the Hunter Renfros and the Deion Kanes of the 2016 team, which I'm very fortunate. I was the last like freshman class at Clemson to see them play, which is incredible. But yeah, they are a different team. Like you can't really compare the two. They have totally different talent at this point. You know, the seniors who are in my class are the only guys who were on that team then. So I think it's just two totally different teams, and yes, they are on the underdog train this season.
So let's look back at the Fiesta Bowl a little bit against Ohio State. Clemson winning that game 29-23, down 16-0 early, get a big run from Trevor Lawrence, 67 yards, where who knew the guy could run that well. What did you take away from that comeback win from Clemson down the stretch?
So I have four main takeaways that we can talk about. So the first one you kind of alluded to is Trevor's huge run there. I think you just can't make him mad, because after he got hit and he thought his collarbone went out, he came up with a different kind of energy. He was playing with edge. And I think if you make him angry, you're going to pay. Usually he's a pretty calm guy. You know, he's a level headed, not a Joe Burrow. He's not cocky, you know, that kind of thing. But after he got hit, he was determined to go down the field and score. So that's one thing. Don't make him mad. The second thing I would say is that Clemson can start poorly, but they figured out how to recover by the end of the game. It's just too important for Clemson. They care too much to let their poor start, affect the result of the game, if you will. So Clemson can start poorly, which they did, but they did end up recovering. So that's point number two. The third one, Trevor Lawrence can run. I mean, he led the team in rushing. Not even Travis Etienne had more rushing yards than he did. And when he's needed, he will run the ball down the field. I think Ohio State's linebackers are kind of their weakness. And so once they got into the game, Trevor Lawrence saw the opening there and was like, "Coach, I've got to run the football." And he did so, and it is dangerous. And then the fourth thing, Clemson can compete against big teams like Ohio State. All season, Clemson heard, you know, "We don't play anybody, so how will they hold up in the college football playoff?" That was a big question mark. You know, the schedule was pretty weak, which it was, but, you know, I would admit that. But you do have to think about, they play themselves every day of practice, and their own teammates are a pretty tough opponent. So I think they proved in this game that they can handle big games like Ohio State and hopefully also LSU.
Yeah, I think when you look back at that Fiesta Bowl, the one thing I think two things in particular, you win that game by basically keeping Ohio State out of the end zone for the majority of the first half, where if Ohio State turns those field goals into touchdowns, completely different game. So Clemson's defense, more of a bend but don't break, but then obviously got it locked in the second half. And the fact that Clemson can win a game where Travis Etienne only carries the ball 10 times, where he is a big factor in the passing game, which opens up a completely different dynamic for Clemson, but now you throw him with Higgins, like you mentioned, Amari Rodgers made a big play, Justin Ross, 6 catches. It just completes something different where Clemson doesn't have to. I thought going into this game, the running back between Dobbins and Etienne that had more yards would win. Didn't happen that way.
Yeah, that's probably a fair estimation, but yeah, that's also something, Trevor has been running the football
more, and that's something they've worked on a lot this year. You know, Clemson gets up by several touchdowns, and then it's kind of like, "Here, Travis, go run a route and then catch the football and run it down for 30 yards or something." So yeah, that's something else that Travis has been working on, and he's getting pretty good at it.
So let's take a look at the national championship game, of course, January 13th in New Orleans, which I'm sure Clemson fans are like, "Oh, we got to go play LSU in a basically road game / neutral game." But I'm going to give you the $64,000 question that I'm sure Dabo Sweeney and Brett Venables are going to figure out. How does Clemson stop Joe Burrow?
Man, I wish I could tell you. I just really don't know. I think hopefully Venables will figure it out by January 13th. But nobody else has figured out how to stop him yet. You know, LSU plays in the SEC. They faced some pretty good teams, and none of which have been able to stop him. So, I mean, sheesh. He's just incredible. Like, you just can't really say enough about him. He's just too good.
I think the big difference, it's going to be basically between the LSU receivers and the Clemson defensive backs. And you have Chase, you have Jefferson at wide receiver. Jefferson had the big game against Oklahoma. So how would you say these Clemson secondary can match up with Chase and Jefferson on the outside, where Burrow can basically complete any deep pass at will against most teams in the country?
Yeah, they're going to have to be on their A game for sure. But again, they haven't seen the best receivers all season. So and you know, it's going to be tough for Clemson secondary. We do have Isaiah Simmons, he can play anywhere on the field that you put him. And he's certainly a weapon for Clemson on the defensive side, but Joe Burrow can make just about any pass that he wants to, as you said. So I think it's going to be really tough. But again, they've got 2 weeks to prepare. You know, I put my trust in Brent Venables and his staff, but my heart is telling me that Clemson can pull it out, but my head is telling me that Joe Burrow is just gonna let him fly.
Well, I think the one thing in Clemson's back pocket is, while they haven't played somebody of this team caliber like LSU, they did go play Alabama in the title game last year. Now, Alabama and LSU, two different teams, but when you're playing the Jerry Judys and the Devontae Smiths, Chase and Jefferson aren't the same, but they're similar speed kind of guys. So at least, like, maybe Clemson can maybe feed off of that a little bit and maybe take some strategy in their favor for at least this game where they're facing similar kind of players.
Yeah, that would be the hope they would pull on their experience, which they do have an advantage over a lot of, you know, the teams they've faced so far. These guys are young still, but they have a lot of experience because they've played in big games in the last few years, you know, going to the college football playoff for the last 5 years.
So you look at this Clemson offense. We talk about Lawrence, we talk about Etienne. Who is the X factor for you when you watch them play? Who doesn't get enough attention that you think deserves more recognition on this team?
Well, he gets a fair amount of attention, but T. Higgins is just a magician. Like, he makes Trevor Lawrence look so good. Obviously, you know, you can't have one without the other. The quarterback has to have someone to throw to, and obviously the receiver has to have someone to throw to him. But T. Higgins he can just catch almost any ball that you throw in his general direction, and he'll run it for several yards. And it's just, he's able to break away from safeties as well. And that really sets him apart in my mind. You know, Travis Etienne, we talked about, he's becoming a little more diverse, being able to run the ball, but also, you know, run a few yards and then catch the ball and continue down the field. Everybody knows about Trevor Lawrence. So those are my big three. T. Higgins is just a magician. I think that's a good way to describe him.
Obviously, being on campus and covering the Tigers, you get more interactions with Dabo Swinney than probably anybody out there. From your time at Clemson and your interactions with Dabo, what stands out the most to you about him as a coach?
I think the thing is, his focus, yes, he wants to win games, but I think his main focus is developing his players into young men, into good employees, you know, husbands, fathers, and Clemson has a focus on getting your degree. Like, you are a student athlete. You're not just an athlete. And I think that's something that's really important to him. His players love him. The parents of the players love him. The students love him. I mean, we have, like, you know, Dabo for President stickers that kids put on their laptop and, you know, Dabo everything. He basically is, you know, rules Clemson, the city as well. And he seems like a truly genuine guy. Like, he is a sweet man on top of being an excellent football coach. So I think just being, you know, the focus that he has on developing the players as young men as well as football players is really something that sets him apart.
Yeah, I think the one thing you look at Dabo is, look, it's a tough coaching job because you're not going to get coached to your credit because you go undefeated or lose maybe one game a year. But for this team to come off a national championship and have that laser focus, yes, they struggled a little bit early, but to really not let up for more than maybe a game or two, I think deserves a lot of credit that these kids at 18, 19, 20 years old didn't really have that hangover and just kept dominating people.
Exactly, and it's a new season. Like, as soon as this championship week is over, they're on to next season. And, you know, we have a parade and celebrate this win, and, we, you know, we have in the past. But it really is, it's just moving on to the next. They say the best is yet to come. So even though Clemson has achieved incredible things in the last 10 years, it's the best is yet to come for Dabo. And they do have a forward focus in everything they do.
You mentioned at the top of the interview you wanted to see Trevor Lawrence run the football more, and he did in a big way in the Fiesta Bowl. How have you seen Trevor Lawrence improve from last year to this year?
I think last year he really didn't do very much wrong. He was, you know, the star freshman that there were expectations, but they weren't nearly as high as they were for this year. So I think last year he just went out and played football and was the raw talent that he is. But this year, I think I've seen more of improvement from the start of the football season up to now, more than I have from his freshman year up till now, because he did come out this season with a lot of pressure on himself, and he wasn't as confident as he had been in the past. And so I think he's made better decisions lately than he was in the beginning of this season. He decided to just ignore the pressure and play the football game. One game I like to look back at is this year's Louisville game. He had two picks and a field goal before he even scored the first touchdown of the game. But then since then, it's kind of a turning point for him. He hasn't had any interceptions since then. And so I think he just made the conscious decision to be like, you know what? There is a lot of pressure on me, but I just want to go play this game and, you know, win with my teammates. And I think he just decided to let go of the pressure that, you know, the outside was putting on him, and probably he was putting on himself as well with, you know, coming off a freshman season where you went 15-0 for the first time in the modern football era. How incredible is that? So I think just kind of he took the pressure off of himself and was able to just play the game of football, probably since that, you know, UNC Louisville timeframe.
Yeah, definitely. You brought up a good point. This Louisville game, 22 touchdowns, no interceptions, at least throwing the ball. And those are some good teams they beat along the way. Yes, they played your BCs, your South Carolinas, but Wake Forest was a pretty good team. They blew them out of the water. Virginia almost beat Florida the other night in the Orange Bowl, so you have to give them credit for the Virginia win. And I think, like you said, he doesn't have to throw the ball around the schoolyard to be effective. Like, I think maybe he finally realized, look, I got Etienne, I've got a good running attack. I don't have to do everything to win a football game. And I think maybe everything came easy for him. I mean, to go through that somewhat adversity for him, definitely will be a good thing going forward, because he's going to have the same hype going into next year when he's arguably the Heisman Trophy favorite and the number one draft pick. Team's tanking for Trevor once again. So handling the pressure well this year could be a good indicator going into next as well.
Exactly. I think he, like you were saying, he doesn't have to have all of the pressure on himself. With the wide receivers that he has, we like to call ourselves wide receiver U at Clemson. He has got incredible weapons around him who he can throw the ball to. And, you know, as long as it's in their general direction, they're probably going to go grab it for, you know, 40 yards. that's just how it's been this season. So he's a little bit freer, I think, this like second half of the season. And that's worked out really well in Clemson's favor.
So wide receiver U versus DBU, that should be an interesting matchup in the Superdome 11 days from now. So got a long way to go. We won't hold you to this prediction. We understand that coming in, you said your head leans one way, your heart leans another way. In the end, who do you think wins and why?
Oh, I can't believe you're doing this to me. I would love to see Clemson win, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm a senior. This would be, you know, my third national championship in my career at Clemson. However, I don't see very many weaknesses in LSU's team. They're strong on offense, strong on defense, and certainly stronger than Clemson on special teams. If Clemson has to, you know, kick a field goal at some point versus, you know, going for a fourth down, I think Dabo would probably go for the fourth down, because Clemson's field goal is just not great at the moment. So I don't know if it will come down to that, but I think that's not Clemson's strong suit at the moment. So unless Venables finds some beautiful way to poke holes in Joe Burrow and LSU's offense, I might have to say that they would win the football game. It hurts, but they're just seem so unstoppable to me. And I know Clemson at their peak is also just a force, but Clemson just can't afford to start slow like they did against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And maybe they've learned their lesson this game and they will come out, you know, firing on all cylinders on offense. But I mean, he's just dangerous. Joe Burrow, you just can't even touch him. So if Clemson puts together a complete game, offense, defense, special teams, then I can see Clemson winning, but just any small, you know, turnover or something could be deadly for the Clemson Tigers, at least. Can't really say Tigers when you're talking about this game.
Yeah, that's the weird part about this game. You can't say Tigers to either one.
And they both play in a Death Valley, so there you go.
I was about to say, you can't expect to get down 10-0 in New Orleans, basically on the road, and really expect anything big to come down as opposed to an actual neutral site game in Glendale. Two totally different things, and basically you could put the old don't put it in the hands of a college kicker analogy. It is in a dome, so at least you have a better chance to make it in a dome than you do in any other conditions, but definitely that could play a factor. You go for the touchdown at the end rather than the field goal. Mm-hmm. I would say, before I have you talk about what you do at Tiger Vision, things like that, as a student on campus, you mentioned this, if Clemson wins on the 13th, it's your third championship covering. What is that like to be on campus covering this team? And it's basically the only team reporters that could rival that to you is like if you covered the Patriots or something like that.
Essentially, yeah. I tell people all the time, I'm so incredibly spoiled. Like, how crazy is my, you know, college career at Clemson? And then Clemson, we had a dark period, if you will, in the 90s. And so when I meet people who were at Clemson then, they're like, you've got it so good. Like, you can't even imagine, you know, what I went through losing to South Carolina X amount of times in a row, blah, blah, blah. So at this point, I just don't know anything different. So hopefully Clemson will continue to ride this high for a nice long time. But yes, I've been incredibly fortunate that Clemson has been so successful in football, at least. Some of our other sports might could use a little help, but at least in football, been incredibly fortunate with how good these teams have been.
So tell listeners out there about Tiger Vision, what you guys do over there, and how the listeners can follow you and Tiger Vision's coverage of the championship game on Twitter.
Yes, so Tiger Vision is Clemson's student TV station. So we are completely run by students. We put on TV shows every week. A lot of our content lives digitally. We do air our shows on campus as well, but our TV shows are streamed on Facebook Live. And we will be at the national championship, myself and another photographer. And so you can follow us on Facebook. It's just Tiger Vision, all one word. And on Twitter and Instagram, we are at CU Tiger Vision. So we will be posting videos and photos and all kind of good stuff there. And then if you wanted to follow me, you can follow me, on Twitter at Amy C. McKenna. That is my handle.
See, I'll give you the perfect sports weekend for Tiger Vision. I've just checked this out now. It could be like a great 4 days for Clemson. January 11th, they go to North Carolina for basketball. They rarely ever beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill basketball.
So never.
They find a way to win that. Then they win the national championship. Then they play Duke the next night at home. You probably have Dabo bring the trophy, and the Tigers football team bring the trophy, and they beat Duke. You get like could have a perfect 4 days of college sports down there. The constant partying in South Carolina.
And that's how it was last year as well. I actually was able. I happened to be a Duke basketball fan, so. Clemson played at Duke in basketball 2 days before last year's national championship. So I drove from my home in Charleston up to Durham, then covered the game in Durham, drove a couple hours to Greenville, South Carolina, flew from Greenville out to California, covered the national championship, and then flew back, you know, the day after the game. And then this year, I will be doing basically the same, but in a different order. So the national championship in New Orleans on the 13th, and then fly back in the morning and drive to Clemson so I can cover Duke basketball in Clemson, which is just insane. it's too crazy. Like, they got to quit doing that because it's just too much. I had to find a flight that would get me back to Greenville in time to get to the game, which, you know, woe is me, but it's pretty cool.
Be sure to follow Tiger Vision for all of your coverage of this national championship game from a Clemson student perspective. It's always great to get the student perspective from students who cover these teams and are around the team more than national reporters. So I think Amy brings a great perspective here for Clemson. Amy, again, thanks for joining us. Keep up the great work. Best of luck with the coverage of the national championship game and for these basketball games to come. And thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And special thanks to Amy McKenna from Tiger Vision for hopping on the show. talking about the Clemson Tigers again. I think it's going to be a really good game on January 13th, and we're going to break it down more coming up in next week's show, which will be episode number 10. Amazing. We're going to get to 10 episodes. I mean, thank you all for tuning in to the first 9 episodes. I'm excited to get, of course, I think it was some big baseball news as well. Going to touch on that real quick while we got a couple more minutes left in the show. Luis Robert is one of the top prospects in baseball. He got a 6-year deal from the White Sox. You could argue the White Sox kind of did this to get him on the Major League roster quickly, so they have to send him down to AAA and use the service time. But Robert still gets 6 years, $50 million, has a chance to be 8 years at about $80 million or so. And you look what the White Sox have done with the Keuchel signing to help their pitching staff. The White Sox have made some really good moves this winter. And you look at the American League Central right now, it is pretty wide open in terms of who can make a run to the AL Central title. So I like the White Sox. I don't know if I like them to win the division, but they're going to be one of the more improved teams in 2020. So I love what they're doing. Of course, Josh Donaldson's still out there. Marcelo Ozuna's still out there. Nick Castellanos is still out there. So many good names. We still have big trade options. Does Mookie Betts get dealt? Does Chris Bryant get dealt? Does Francisco Lindor get dealt? A lot of things can change between now and middle of February when we get to pitchers and catchers. So NFL playoffs start this weekend. We got head coaching news. So much to get into over the next few weeks or so. It makes, I think, this time in sports a lot of fun. You can follow me on Twitter, at RickNader555. It's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader, like in Terminator, 555. You can follow us on Twitter, at Full Press Radio, at FP Coverage. We've got some great shows. I know Ian Glendon and Mike DeBate do a great job during the morning on FPC Live. Snowman in the Morning's on in the morning. FPC College Radio on Monday. We got team podcasts as well. So much going on the Full Press Radio Network. We want to get you involved as well. So feel everything is usually, you go to Full Press Radio. We have a show going on at all times. So that's a lot of fun as well. Again, follow the show on iTunes, subscribe, like the show, give a rating, 1-star, 5-star, however you're feeling. I'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks to all those who have listened to the show so far. If you have an idea for 2020, if you want to see a different segment, if you like a segment that I've been doing, let me know. I'd love to get your feedback. Subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Kicking It with Keeler is on those platforms. So hopefully, at least if you're a Patriots fan, you hope that we like what you see this weekend. If you're not, I'm sure you're hoping the opposite. But we're going to talk about it more next week. Hopefully we'll be back on Thursday and we'll preview divisional weekend. We'll talk about wild card weekend, play a little word association with divisional round. We'll hopefully either have a guest to talk about the playoffs or we'll have a guest to talk about LSU's side of the spectrum for the national championship game, which we'll talk about more again next week. So from all of us here at the Full Press Radio Network, we hope you have a great start to your 2020. And enjoy the NFL playoffs. Enjoy all the sports going on this week. And college basketball is in full swing now with conference play. Enjoy that. And I'll see you back here next week. Thanks again for kicking it with me, Ricky Keeler.